BBC Radio 4, it's 10:45. Now, book at bedtime, and as they settle into their roles as amateur detectives, Carol and Jude are trying to establish a connection between the dead body on Feathering Beach, the abandoned Stanley knife in Rory Turnbull's boat, and the apparent suicide of a local teenager, Aaron Spalding. Joanna Tope reads The Body on the Beach by Simon Brett.
The Downside estate had been built as council housing. Its tiny front gardens were unkempt and littered. The drab November weather did not add to the estate's charms as Carol navigated her sensible and immaculately clean Renault towards Drake Crescent. Outside one maisonette was a van bearing the regional television station's logo. A couple of Dour technicians were rolling up cables, while an effete young man stood awkwardly by. Carol parked the car, and Jude jumped out. As she started up the short path that led to Teresa Spalding's front door, the young man said, "I'm not sure she wants to talk to anyone else at the moment. Unless, of course, you're social workers." "That's right," Jude replied breezily as she pressed the doorbell. It was a moment or two before the front door was half opened. The woman was undoubtedly the one who'd come to Carol's house. Her darting eyes were raw with weeping.
"What do you want? I don't want to talk to no one."
"We may be able to help you find out how Aaron died," said Jude.
"My boy's dead. That's all that matters to me. I don't want to talk about it."
Carol stepped forward.
"Then perhaps you do want to talk about why you drew a gun on me."
Reluctantly, the crack of the door widened.
"You'd better come in, then."
Teresa Spalding gestured to a couple of broken-down chairs, stubbed out the remains of a cigarette, and with trembling hands shook another out of a packet. She remained standing while she lit the new one.
"Mrs. Spalding," Jude began, "I understand..." "Oh, it's not Mrs. But if you think that means I didn't bring up Aaron right..."
"We're not saying that. Look, Teresa... Can I call you Teresa? I'm Jude, and my friend's called Carol. We're desperately sorry about what happened to Aaron."
"Why? What business is it of yours?"
"None," Carol responded, "if you hadn't come to my house and threatened me with a gun."
"Oh, you needn't have worried," said Teresa Spalding. "It wasn't a real gun, just a thing Aaron bought."
The good cop and the bad cop exchanged glances. "What really interests me," said Carol, "is that you mentioned the body I'd found on the beach that morning. Did Aaron tell you about that?"
"Aaron didn't have anything to do with that bloke dying. Aaron was a good boy."
The words unleashed a flood of tears. Jude rose and put an arm around her, led the woman to sit down. "Cry," she murmured. "It's good. You need to cry." Carol picked up again.
"You were particularly concerned about something in the dead man's pocket. What was it?" "I don't know. But it was something with Aaron's name on it. They all had to put their name on it. It was part of the test. I was afraid the police would find it."
"Who's they?" asked Jude softly.
"The other lads. The ones he was with when they found the body."
"At the yacht club?" Teresa nodded.
"Aaron got in about 4 that morning, crying like a kid. Oh, they'd been drinking. Then they broke into the yacht club. It wasn't Aaron's idea. It was the others. And they broke into one boat and found this man's body. He was definitely dead before they found him. I don't know what they did to it or what they put in his pockets, but it was some kind of test. Anyway... it ended up with them chucking the body over the sea wall into the Feather. Aaron was in a bad way. Kept saying the undead body would come after him. Oh, I tried to calm him and put him to bed. In the morning I found he'd gone. That was the last time I saw my boy. Oh, that's why I came round your place with a gun. I had to stop anyone who knew anything about the body talking to the police. But Aaron didn't come back. It was the drugs. He was convinced this undead body was going to come after him. So he must have jumped into the feather at high tide. And that was the end.
What about his friends, said Jude? The ones he was with?
Friends?
Teresa Spaulding spat out the word.
There's a bunch that gets together. Could have been any of them. But there's one I'm sure was involved. Older boy. Aaron worshipped him. I'm sure it was him who got Aaron into drugs. Name's Dylan. A tall, thin lad with short bleached hair. Wears one big earring.
Any idea where he lives?
Somewhere local. He's left the school. Think he's got a job now.
Doing what?
Carpet fitter,
said Teresa Spaulding. J.T. Carpets was a flat, rectangular building on a retail estate just outside East Preston. There were few customers that afternoon, and the two women were quickly accosted by a young man in a sharp suit. Jude announced that she was looking for a hard-wearing carpet for her landing and staircase. As the young man started to offer suggestions, Carol broke in. "Excuse me, do you have a toilet?"
"What?"
The young man was totally thrown.
"I need to go to the toilet."
"Oh, well, we don't have public toilets."
"You must have staff facilities."
"Yes, but I'm desperate. It's my age." The young man was so embarrassed by this that he immediately called over one of his female colleagues. Jude hid her grin as Carol was escorted out to the office area at the back.
"Now, your cheapest option," the young man continued, blanking out the interruption, "would be a hard-wearing cord."
Jude listened, occasionally throwing in doubts and questions. Just as she was running out of steam, Carol returned from the lavatory.
"Better?"
"Much better, thanks. How are you doing?"
"This young gentleman has been extremely helpful," said Jude.
"But I think I'd better go home and discuss the options with Kevin."
"Good idea," said Carol. It wasn't until they were back in the car that she asked,
"Who the hell's Kevin?"
"A necessary fiction. Did you find out what you wanted to?"
"Yes. Dylan is scheduled to be fitting carpets in a house on the Shorelands estate tomorrow morning for a Mrs. Grant Edwards. I've memorized the details."
"How did you find out?"
"From a duty schedule board in the office. Mind you, they might have told us if we'd just asked."
She giggled.
"But the way I did it was much more fun."
Just before 9 the following morning, Gulliver having been duly walked, Carol brought the Renault to a stop opposite an Elizabethan pastiche with tall windows and bunches of thin, imaginatively topped chimneys. Its name, Bally High, was spelled out in rustic pokerwork on a piece of driftwood. In the driveway, behind closed railings, a large green Jaguar squatted, toad-like.
"I think we're just in time," Jude said. "Look!"
A yellow transit van was drawing up. Lettering on the side read, J.T. Carpets.
"Here we go,"
said Carol, her hand tightening round the Stanley knife in her pocket. Two men got out of the van and went round to open the doors at the back. Both were middle-aged, one completely bald, the other with grizzled grey hair. Jude shook her head ruefully.
"Looks like Dylan's called in sick."
But just as she spoke, they heard the sound of a car approaching fast. It was a souped-up Golf GTI.
"I think this could be our quarry," said Carol as she opened the door.
They were both standing in front of Bally High's railings by the time the boy emerged from his Golf. Bleached hair, single earring. He looked through them as he came up to the gates.
"Are you Dylan?" asked Carol.
"Why, if I am?"
"I've got something that belongs to you."
Carol took the Stanley knife out of her pocket and held it in her open palm. Though he quickly covered it up, the boy's first reaction was undoubtedly one of shock.
"Oh, well, thanks," he said casually, reaching out for the knife.
Carol withdrew her hand.
"Don't you want to know where we found it?"
"Not particularly."
"We found it in a boat, at the Feathering Yacht Club," said Jude. Dylan's lip curled.
Nosy pair of old tarts, aren't you? He made to push past them. Jude put her hand on his sleeve. We have proof that you were at the yacht club on Monday night, she lied, with Aaron Spalding and another boy. Dylan turned back to look her straight in the face. What if I was? Not crime, is it? We sank a few cans in a shelter on the front, and Aaron asked me if I'd lend him my Stanley knife, so I did.
What did he want it for?
How should I know? He shrugged. And then I went home. I didn't go down the yacht club. What the other two done, I've no idea. Now, if you'll excuse me, I do have work to do.
Don't you want your knife back? Asked Carol.
If not, I'll keep it.
Please yourself.
As evidence.
Evidence of what?
Suddenly, he'd seized the lapel of Carol's raincoat and brought his face close up to hers. Her nostrils were filled with a sickly musk-flavoured aftershave.
You two harass me any more, and things could get very unpleasant. So I'd advise you both to get off my bloody back.
He raised his free hand to Carol's face. She flinched. Dylan chuckled and touched her cheek. Then he let go of her coat and turned towards the house.
Who was the third boy? Said Jude. There was you and Aaron Spalding and someone else.
That's for you to find out, mind you. I don't think you will.
Why, is he dead too?
Jude called after the retreating back as Dylan strode up the drive. But there was no answer. And the Stanley knife remained in Carol's hand.
He's lying,
Jude hissed, the first time that Carol had seen her angry.
He was with them at the yacht club.
I know, said Carol. But how are we going to prove it?
They didn't have far to go through the Shorelands estate to reach Brigadoon. The front garden's Victorian lampposts continued to look incongruous in their mock Spanish surroundings. The woman who came to the door was probably in her late 40s. She wore jeans and a faded sweatshirt. Her face looked drained and exhausted.
Good morning, she said in a surprisingly cultured voice. I'm afraid Mrs. Turnbull isn't in.
You're Maggie, said Jude. We were hoping you'd be back. It was you we wanted a word with about your son.
The woman's shoulders drooped.
What's he done?
That's what we want to find out. In particular, what he was doing last Monday night.
The woman's eyes widened, and some instinct told Carol this was the moment again to produce the Stanley knife.
What's that? Where did you find it?
This woman had something to tell them. They didn't want to lose her. Just then, the telephone on the hall table rang.
Maggie said urgently, Listen, I can't talk now. You'd better come to my place. Number 26, Spindrift Lane. It's not far. Say, 12:30. I'll be back by then.
Fine, said Jude.
And please, don't say anything to anyone.
There was a naked appeal in Maggie's eyes as she echoed Teresa Spalding's words.
Nick's a good boy. He is, really.
And Joanna Tope continues reading The Body on the Beach by Simon Brett on Monday evening at 11:15. The producer in Edinburgh is David Jackson Young.